Gender and Climate Change at the Montreal Conference in December 2005.
Oh no, just remember peace, my friend. Can I come till we remember we are one?
Education is addressing questions of gender and climate change. We will talk about why gender aspects should be taken into account when working towards climate protection and adaptation to climate change. But first, let me introduce ourselves. Ulrike Röhr is an engineer and a sociologist by background and has been working on gender issues in planning, Local Agenda 21, building, energy, climate change, and broader sustainable development issues since the 1970s. Myself, Minu Hemmati, I'm a psychologist by background and have been working in UN processes on environment and sustainable development issues since about 1997. I'm now also working with Ulrike on gender and climate change issues. We are both working with GENANET, Focal Point for Gender Justice and Sustainability, which Ulrike has set up in 2003. GENANET is a project of LIFE, a women's environment organization based in Germany. GENANET works to raise awareness of gender equity and in environment and sustainability policy, to implement gender mainstreaming in environment policy making. If you want to know more, please visit the website. At the European level, we are working with the network Women in Europe for a Common Future. So, why are we talking about gender and climate change?
Well, despite its status and development within the United Nations international system, climate change policy making has failed to adopt a gender-sensitive strategy. This failure not only generates concerns in terms of respect for gender equity at the international level, it leads also to shortcomings in the efficiency and effectiveness of climate change measures and instruments. Without a gender-sensitive method of analysis, it is impossible to determine in the full set of causes and potential effects of climate change. Furthermore, studies have shown that women and men experience climate change differently in terms of their adaptability, responsibility, vulnerability, and aptitude for mitigation. Therefore, the international climate negotiation process, as well as climate policies at regional, national, and local levels, must adopt the principles of gender equity at all stages, from research to analysis and the design and implementation of mitigation and adaptation strategies. Otherwise, climate-related policy making will be unable to achieve true legitimacy or relevance. This applies in particular to the process towards a post-2012 climate protection system or regime, in which shape or form it is about to begin. This may sound a bit abstract. So, what does gender mean in the context of climate change?
Well, looking at mitigation through a gender lens, for example, we can ask, who is causing how many emissions and for what purpose? And how can we best inform women and men about the connections between their behavior and climate change? Also, how can we help women and men to change their behavior and cause fewer emissions? And what impacts do mitigation policies have on women and men in their work and their daily lives? Will rising energy prices, for example, affect women and men differently? But can we answer these questions?
We are just beginning to learn about these questions. For example, relating to the different roles fulfilled in society, there seems to be significant differences in energy use between women and men. Existing data and gender roles suggest that men produce more emissions and more selfish ones. That is related to maintaining and exercising their social status, whereas women produce emissions when caring and catering for other people, like children, elderly, sick. For example, men more often drive cars and bigger ones, and more often use them for work outside and for leisure activities. In the case of mobility, substantial work has already been done to analyze gender dimensions of policies and measures. Existing transport systems in many countries have been designed with a specific view to middle-aged, healthy, full-time working men, neglecting women's higher dependency on public transport and their specific needs when they look after children and elderly. Integrating a gender perspective would make transport system both more user-friendly and more climate-friendly. So this was in relation to mitigation. And what about adaptation?
Vulnerability and adaptation are largely social issues. We are learning, for example, how natural disasters affect women and men. Following the cyclone and flood in 1991 in Bangladesh, the death rate was almost five times as high for women as it was for men. Warning information was transmitted by men to men in public spaces, but rarely communicated to the rest of the family. Many women are not allowed to leave their homes without a male relative, and they waited for their relatives to return home and take them to a safe place. Moreover, as in many Asian countries, most Bengali women have never learned to swim. Another illustration of the differences in vulnerability is the fact that more men than women died during Hurricane Mitch in Central America. It has been suggested that this was due to existing gender norms, in which ideas about masculinity encouraged heroic, in this case very risky, action in a disaster. It is widely acknowledged that the negative effects of climate change are likely to hit the poorest people in the poorest countries the hardest. Since women form a disproportionate share of the poor in developing countries and in communities that are highly dependent on local natural resources, women are likely to be disproportionately vulnerable to the effects of climate change. More examples can be found when looking at the effects of drought and deforestation. In many developing countries, women are responsible for fetching water and firewood, tasks that become ever more burdensome and time-consuming due to widespread environmental changes. It is girls, more often than boys, who will drop out of school to fulfill these tasks. It is women who will be further limited in their opportunities to engage in work outside their home. As evident in the latest, albeit still preliminary, research presented here in Montreal, successful adaptation will have to be context-specific and participatory. All members of affected communities must be part of a climate change planning and governance process. Without fully involving women in planning and decision-making, the quality of adaptive measures will be limited and their successful implementation will remain doubtful. Climate change also affects people's health, and it is women who look after their children and elderly family members when they are sick. If such demands on women increase, they will, for example, again be less able to pursue income-generating activities. But what actions can be taken to properly address gender issues?
There are many actions that can and need to be taken, from research to policy to public information to funding. Let me just tell you what women have been starting to do here in Montreal. We have begun to build our network and gather our expertise on gender and climate change issues. We need to pull together and to share our knowledge to make it clear to policymakers why they need to put gender onto the climate change agenda. We are also working to provide information to women and men worldwide, for example, through articles and interviews and through climate talks like this one with various media. but much more needs to happen there. So basically, in Montreal, we have started to work together as women and men concerned about gender issues. And we will be around over the coming years, growing our networks and coalitions and make our voices heard. But you were asking what actions could be taken. These are some actions that can be taken by governments right in this process. We all know from experiences in other UN processes, in national policy making, in development, and so on, how we can begin to make sure that gender aspects are not ignored. For example, conducting gender analysis by asking, what do climate policies mean for women and men? Are there differences? And how can such differences be addressed to ensure gender and climate justice? Or regarding vulnerability, we need to learn in what ways women and men are vulnerable to climate change. We have to ask what are the strengths and skills of women and men that we need to build on. So, in short, what do you think we should all do?
Well, I think we need to recognize this. Climate change, in all its aspects, is a truly global challenge. We need to address it with the utmost urgency, in solidarity, and doing justice to all people, young and old, south and north, east and west, women and men, girls and boys. And we need to recognize that we can only achieve this bold goal if we come together as a global community, learning from each other and with each other how to protect our climate within the framework and under the core principles of the United Nations, that is peace, justice, and sustainable development. Thank you.